You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, digging deeper into the issues that make and break our lives. And our guest on this Sunday is Gary Fine. Gary, welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
And I just want to, you want to just give me, give me a little bit of a capsule of how you would introduce yourself to part of the show is to help us kind of label ourselves in ways that we can honor and hold on to when we don't necessarily know who's listening.
Hmm. Well, I'm just a regular guy living in a nice city in the United States. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of interests, and depending on who I would talk to, I would introduce myself really differently.
Right, no, this is true.
So to you, I'd say, oh, hi, I'm Gary Fine. Nice to meet you.
Uh-huh. And that's, in effect, that's where we start. But by the end of the show, we will have a much fuller picture.
Oh, good.
And that's how it goes. So you came with a list of music, and I'm going to start our time with your first selection, which is Reverend Gary Davis's reinterpretation of Samson and Delilah, a song that I grew up knowing as If I Had My Way. And here we go.
If I had my way, if I had my way, if I had my way, I would tear this building down. If I had my way, oh, if I had my way, if I had my way, I would tear this building down. Delilah, she was a woman, fine and fair, had good looks, cardinal and coal black hair. Delilah gained old Samson's mind when the first he met this woman at this time. Delilah, she came.
Oh! had killed a man with his paws, but Samson got his hands in the lion jaws. He reared that beast until he killed him dead, and the bees made honey in the lion's head. If I had my way, if I had my way, if I had my way, I would die. Ooh! If I had my way, if I had my way, if I had my way, I would die.
And that was the Reverend Gary Davis with If I Had My Way, the Samson and Delilah song, which I actually know is If I Had My Way, and that's how I found it. But anyway, so you're listening to the Made of Clay Report. This is WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. And our guest this morning on this hour is Gary Fine. So, Gary, you're a man of many hats, perhaps even far more hats than I have. So I'm going to what hat do you have that you relate to that song?
Well, boy, I guess that's my farmer hat, which would be funny that you wouldn't think so when you say that, in terms of, like, the memory of that song was, you know, 30 years ago, my buddies and I had a farm business, and it was all in a greenhouse. It was all indoor sprouts and live foods, and we had very little, but we had electricity in the cabin we lived in, and so we had a stereo and a turntable and a bunch of records, and not many, and so they'd go in rotation.
And keep everybody happy.
We would play certain songs over and over, certain albums over and over, but also when I heard those steel guitars, you know, a long time ago, it just caught my attention, you know, and I also have these vague memories of Gary Davis, you know, and I didn't know it was Gary Davis until later on, but I grew up in New York City, and you'd walk the streets in the mid early 60s, and you'd see these different people playing music, and I remember this one blind guy playing a Steel National guitar, and it may not even been Gary Davis, you know what I mean? Yeah. But when I heard the song and I saw him, and I just said, oh, that's something familiar about that.
Takes me back home.
Takes me back, yeah.
Wow. So, on this show, I ask people to kind of reflect on what's a major experience that has helped to kind of define who you are and kind of your the way, because you wear a lot of hats you had, how has that come to be?
It's funny. I could talk about a lot of things that have caused me, but like a major experience, you know, especially a humbling experience. Uh-huh. And so I'll go back to that time when I was a farmer a long time ago, and we were all vegetarians, and we were growing sprouts, and people would come and live at this farm because they had cancer or they had some disease, and they were going on these all raw food diets. And I was in this head of like, oh, I'm going to eat so pure, and I'm going to clean myself, and I'm going to just really go somewhere. I wasn't sick. I was just, just going to, you know, I'm going to transcend. I don't know what, you know, you could read books about how to eat, and I'm eating these sprouts, and I used to teach classes out in Seattle area, you know, and the farm was outside of town, but we'd go in town and deliver and sell there, and I loved it, and it was really fun, and I was a little bit like, oh, I've got something, and people need to know about it, and blah, 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 and I'd be teaching classes and sprouting and things, and every day I felt a little sicker and a little more ill, and at first everybody's going, oh, you know, you're having a healing reaction, stay with it. And I just kept not feeling good and getting weaker in my mind, and just I started thinking I was smelling bad. I just, you know, my buddies were loving it. You know, I was doing it with a group of friends, and we were all doing it together. And I started having a reoccurring dream. And in the dream, there was a girlfriend of mine from years past, and she was leaving the house, and I was babysitting for her. And she'd say, oh, by the way, there's a pot roast in the oven. And I'd have this dream, you know, every so often, and meanwhile, I'm feeling sicker and sicker and thinking, oh, I'm healing. And just to make a long story short, eventually I realized, like, oh, I really needed to eat meat, and meat was medicine for me in that time. And it was so good because it was so humbling from that thought of this is how things should be, or thinking I knew something. Mm-hmm. And And that has informed me in life all through. Whenever I think I know something, mm-hmm. it's only just because I think I know it rather than I really know anything. And so it was very humbling and in a funny way, but also very empowering because it set me free from thinking I need to know or I have any idea of really what's going on.
Right. And I want to spend some time with that in like two or three different ways. And one of them is what the nature of confidence is, because it's not what we often think it is. And the other one is just, was there like a vitamin B12 issue or something like that?
I have no, I have.
Because you didn't go for it. You didn't go down the science path.
I had this dream. So this is even funnier. Yeah. So I had this dream and I had all these people who were coming in, like we were selling this thing called wheatgrass, which was at the time and still is something people say, oh, it's this healing food and you juice it and you get well. And I had these people who were so committed to it. And one guy comes in with a little crystal and he has a pendulum. And I didn't know anything about pendulums, didn't think much about it. He says, I'm going to find out. And he's asking all these things. And he was a devout vegetarian. And finally he asked about meat. And it was like, oh, meat. And I went, well, okay. And then this was a really good experience for me. I haven't had very many teachers in life. And the one time I actually had a teacher was at this farm. When I got there, there was a woman, Hazel Dickens. She ran the place and she was like 75 years old and she had been sickly into her 40s. And she had come upon a way to eat that changed it around. And Hazel could, I was like in my 20s and she could outwork me and my buddies who all day. She mm-hmm. was just like this, and she was a Christian, and we used to do Bible studies with her, even though we had no real Christian leanings. We just liked hanging around Hazel and doing this stuff. And I told Hazel this, and she goes, don't tell. And she actually pulled out of a drawer a little crystal, and it was really hard because she was a Seventh-day Adventist and very, very, like, by the book in that way. And she pulled out a crystal, too, which, I had no idea people were using these pendulums to get answers. Who knows? And she said, yep, it's meat. And I started eating meat. And again, really the dream that I had, a reoccurring dream that said, by the way, there's a pot roast in the oven. And I would wake up going, oh, you know, I mean, you trust your body. So my life is also very intuitive. I'm very fortunate that my intuition doesn't always keep me out of trouble. But if I pay attention to my intuition, I know a really lot. And as I get older, even now, I just, this last couple months, I've also started moving in a new intuitive way on something else, and it's totally worked. And so intuition is really important. I don't know what goes on to make these things happen, but, you know, so I didn't think about the scientific thing. It was just what made me feel better.
Right. And I think there's something that you're backing up against mm-hmm. here, which we tend to not fully appreciate. And one is we don't necessarily, when you have confidence in ways of knowing or in things that are outside yourself, the control in your life is in those things outside yourself. But when your confidence is a trust that you don't know what you need to know, but you can figure something out and you're up to engaging it even if you can't control it. That kind of confidence, which I think is closely linked to intuition and trusting your intuition, is more what we need to encourage people to do, because it encourages people to take risks that they genuinely feel that they need to take, but they don't always give themselves permission to do. And you seem to have given yourself permission.
Well, I've gotten one more even past sure. that one. For me, yeah. it's like the next step in that is heroic action. You know, it's like you know, these instances didn't really take heroic action to eat meat. There's nothing, just it was a good thing. But
well, you had to buck the norms of the group you were with.
But but it's more like you almost welcome. You, nobody wants to learn some things the way you have to learn them. But when you're faced up with these really hard things, it's like you can either like find the very best in you and bring it out and really ask for it, you know, in yourself. Like this, I could either crumble or I could bring out the very best in myself right now. And even just standing up to whatever I have to deal with is something, even if you don't succeed, is bringing out the very best in yourself. And there's something very empowering about that.
Right. And you just used heroic action in a way that it's the quality with which you choose to live rather than the outcome that you expect.
Absolutely.
And see, many people confuse heroism with, you know, the push to fix something or the push to make an absolute difference, an external difference. But you're talking about doing what seems like it has the best possible thing for you and those around you.
Right.
And you can't guarantee that outcome, and you can't even guarantee that you've analyzed the situation well. But if you're living that way, I imagine that it's easier to admit that you made a mistake.
It's okay. Whatever happens, there's no regret. You know, you're doing the best you can.
Right.
And sometimes the best you can isn't good enough. I mean, that could very well be. Sometimes the best you can isn't good enough. But
there's no regret. You didn't withhold something that you could have done, even if it was a little wacky or even if it was really totally grounded in great science or whatever. You didn't withhold something you genuinely had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty incredible.
Unfortunate.
No. I think you did that, and that's a nifty angle on a conversation that I have not had here before. Now, you came with more music, and there's a Jerry Garcia song here, The Wheel. Do you want to say something before we play it or something after we play it?
Well, community is really important to me, and, you know, for all kinds of reasons. And, like, it's interesting with this, I guess Jerry Garcia kind of represents the Grateful Dead in some way, but in particular, this song has meaning for me. But a lot of my friends like the Grateful Dead. They were always very popular, blah, 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 blah. Again, you know, but one time I went with somebody to a Grateful Dead concert in the 70s, and I was blown away at the sense of community. I remember I was in Seattle again. There was probably some Hell's Angel guy next to me on one side and somebody else I knew on the other side. And we just all were so together in it. And so because they were able to create that sense of community, it's always been an important, just it's very important to me. Very important to me.
Cool.
Meant something.
Well, now we're going to listen to Jerry Garcia, The Wheel. From Garcia, the album in 1972.
Thank you.
And that was Jerry Garcia and The Wheel. And you're listening to the Made of Clay Report. And our guest this hour is Gary Fine. And Gary, you know, like so many Ithacans, you've come from the left coast, or you've come from other places in New York City. You've been on both coasts. What brought you to Ithaca, and what keeps you here?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, easy to what got here is I came to go to college in Binghamton years ago, and I kept moving into the country. I found, it's funny, when I first came up to Binghamton, I remember driving up and leaving the city, you know, hadn't been out of it very much, you know. It's like you see these empty hills, and I go, there's nothing here. I couldn't fathom what it was like to live outside of a city. And then once I was at school, I found myself moving to further and further remote places, out of town. And if you know the area, from Binghamton, I moved like to Vestal, and from Vestal, I moved to Apalachin, and from Apalachin, I moved to Candor. So when I got to Candor, I kind of fell into an Ithaca orbit. You know, instead of going back to Binghamton to shop, I'd come into Ithaca if I needed things. And so I was there for a couple of years, and then I left. And I was traveling around. I went to Florida. I went to massage school in Florida. And then I moved to North Carolina. And I really wanted to buy some land and just settle in somewhere. I thought I wanted to travel a lot, which I haven't been doing. But I wanted a piece of property and land to work and be on. And, you know, and I kept remembering how inexpensive the land in Candor was. When I was looking in North Carolina, it was like you were paying a fortune to live on the side of a mountain. It was like, this doesn't make sense. So really, because land was so inexpensive, I came back here. And actually, I eventually bought up 20 acres of land out towards West Danby, Newfield area. And I lived there until two years ago. And in 2 years ago, for different reasons, I moved into Ithaca, which has been quite an adjustment, because the place I lived in was, anybody who knows me who's been there, it's like it was the last house on a dead-end road, waterfalls, woods, trees. Then, you know, now you can see one or two electric lights, but then you couldn't see any, and it was pretty close to town, but it was really remote in that way, and I really love that land, and I think what keeps me, even though I don't live on that land and I live in town, I still kind of think I live on that land, and I go out there once or twice a week and walk around and hang out, so I feel very grounded, you know, on that. And I think being tied to a piece of property has, and I know I don't own it in any real way, because, you know, we all pass from this planet, I know that the bones of everything that's ever lived there has made that land what it is, and, you know, if I have my bones there one day, that would be nice, but it's okay if they're not, you know.
Right.
So.
Wow,
that's what grounds me.
No, and I grew up in a place where there in the immediate area there were only probably two or three people per square mile, but because it was rolling prairie, we could see the lights of the village 20 miles away.
Wow.
We were kind of on a ridge in North Missouri, so without a lot of trees, so you could see quite far. And that openness is something I miss being here in Ithaca, because there's not that kind of open space, open space, because it's wooded.
Right.
And so I experience the woods sometimes as detracting from the land, but that's an unusual.
This piece of property was not all the way down in the valley, and it actually opened all the way up for miles. So
down a long valley
into hills. And when we started thinking about moving, you don't realize it, but the water, we have a spring, natural spring, and the view were the two hardest things, you know, you just live them and you don't realize how important they are to you until you then say, oh, all right, well, you got to give it up, but they were important.
They are the backdrop of your life,
mm-hmm.
And you act in front.
Yes.
What brought you into town?
What I moved school districts, really. You know, I have three children, and my oldest daughter was able to go to ACS, because her mom lived in town. But I have two more children with my wife and we just were not feeling they were getting the education that we wanted them to have, and we didn't think we should be homeschooling. Our kids are very social and really loved going to school, but they just weren't getting, we just felt like Ithaca would give them this opportunity, and so it was worth it to move to town to give them this opportunity to go to better schools.
Okay. Now, what are some of the issues that kind of motivate your life?
Wow, wow. I have a lot. I have a lot, actually. And I didn't, you know.
Well, you used the term before when we were off air about describing coming, when I asked people to think about who are you, not what you do, who are you? You said, well, you said, I'm kind of a minister, but I don't have a tradition. It's just the way I am in the world.
Right, right. Well, I years ago, I took this aptitude test. I had no idea what I was doing. I had spent a lot of years wandering around the country, and one time we lighted for a while, and a buddy of mine, I went into Catholic Charities, and they give you a test where you answer lots of questions, and they don't tell you what you should do, but they tell you who you answered questions like. And they said, minister, teacher, artist. And I went, oh God, these guys got no clue about me. You know, that's what I thought.
Right.
But then, now looking back 30, 40 years, you go, oh, they had it exactly right. And so, minister, very much so. This is the most profound one. Is one of the things I do. I work at the Durland Alternatives Library up on the Cornell campus. Great library. Anybody, it's open to everybody. We have a tremendous collection on social justice, on politics, on race, religion, music, just sustainability, farming, gender, all kinds of things. But anyway, in that role, I started a prison education program, and I have a couple thousand prisoners who write me regularly, and I have all kinds of, and I could talk about, I could spend the full hour just talking about what I do with people in prison. But I notice that people in prison write me these letters. They go, thank you so much. Normally, to get anybody to do this, we have to have some religion. Normally, for some organization to have an interest in us, we have to ascribe to their religion. Thank you so much for not making us. So I realize I have that same ministerial relationship with them. I give, and it's all about aiding. It's about ministering is aiding. Ministering is belonging. You know, there's. My whole thing is really wanting to feel like I belong. I think that's a human condition. But for me, I'm particularly aware of it because I spent a lot of years where I didn't belong. And so because I think you give what you most want, I feel like I try to give people a sense of belonging.
Right.
And I think that is where the ministering comes in. And the most clearly is I have this flock of thousands of people in prison who write me regularly, and I send them things. And sometimes it's a word of comfort. Mostly it's educational materials or art materials or things to do.
How did that change inside of you from not belonging to belonging? What happened in you? What was the transition?
I don't think anything happened.
Or when did it happen?
I think you give what you most want. I believe you can know. You can't really know people by what they say because people don't even know what they mean. But if you watch what people do and who they are, then you know what they really want. So you can know people and what they really need by what they do in the world and how they act. And I don't know. You know, I wake up to realizing a lot of things. You know, they happen, and then I see, oh, that's why.
You explain it backwards.
So for me, I mean, this is the personal.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So for me, I was very isolated as a child. My mother died really young. My father kind of left, and I got in the hands of like crazy people. And so for years, I was really just like kind of shut away.
That's just how they were. Right.
And I didn't get fed. I didn't get touched. And a book. If I had a book to read, I felt like, oh, thank God, that got me through really
liberation.
Hard times. That was what I had. And so then you go and you live your life. And like I told you before, I went to massage school.
Yep.
And in the middle of massage school, somebody, either I was massaging somebody or somebody was massaging me. And I was like, oh, touch, non-sexual touch. It's like, it's so healing. It's so therapeutic.
Yep.
It is so powerful. Yep. And I knew in that moment, oh, this, I've cured myself of whatever, or I've satisfied whatever I missed as a childhood.
Right.
And then years later, I've worked in a lot of food-related industries, food things. And so I actually worked at the co-op here, Green Star, and anybody who's lived in town knows this store burnt down in the 1990s.
Yep, I remember.
And my job was buying the food at the store. So when we opened this new store on Buffalo Street, I could get all the deals in the world I ever want, because I had, oh, the store burnt down, we were a new store, so all the distributors just wanted to help me out. Right. And my job was to buy food at the lowest prices so members could then get the prices as low as I could. And so I had every inch of that store packed. I was walking around the day or two before the store opened, and I could not find another place to squeeze food in there. And all of a sudden, it's like, boing, I saw, I never have to worry about having enough food in my life again. And I just had this, like, and within 6 months, I loved that job. I did really well there. Within 6 months, I wasn't working there anymore. And it wasn't because of anything bad. I finished that phase of my life. But I never would have told you at that point, oh, I work in food and I'm surrounding myself through food. And so 10 years ago, a prisoner wrote me a letter at the library, said, I heard you send books to people in prison. And I wrote him a letter and said, nah, I don't do that, you know. But I wrote him a friendly letter, and he said, he wrote me a letter saying how much that friendly letter meant to him. And like just a letter, being on the lowest level of administrative segregation, he never comes out of his cell. He can have a book. He can have paper and pencils, and that's his life. And I said, well, I can mail this guy some books. And as soon as I mailed him books, it was like, boing. And now I have 2,000 people more. I've had 11,000 people write me. I have about 2,300 active people in a variety. PrisonerExpress.com. If people want to read the newsletter that I send out every 6 months, it's always changing. And again, that's very ministerial. Like, you know, the newsletter I send out has a lot to do with connecting. It's all about, we're all in this together. Right. And whether you're locked up or free, we all suffer and struggle and live. And there's something miraculous about being alive.
Right. So, PrisonerExpress.com.
.com. No, .org. I'm sorry.
.org. PrisonerExpress.org. You know, I may have said it. PrisonerExpress.org to find out about what's happening there. One of the things that I've stated on this show is that for communication to have integrity, the words need to be intellectually accurate. The emotional content needs to be true, and it needs to be physically compelling. If all three things don't line up, then we don't have human communication. We may have technical words, we may have technical communications, we may have behavior that we observe, but if it's not integrated, we don't have honest human communication. And what you have done over the course of your life is build up the pieces from the deficit that you didn't have to start with. And what I've seen in a lot of people is that when we have not been given honest words or honest emotion, we just watch. And we become darned observant watching people to see what it is they do, so we can read things and kind of have a sense of where they go, because that's where our safety is. And eventually we back up into emotion and then into intellect, has been my experience. But it's beautiful the way you just told that story and how each time you solve a problem in a profound way, you don't have to do it again. It's done. You've learned that lesson.
It's yes, that's how it is, and I can I could start going on for all these other examples,
it's beautiful, and let's cut to we're going to cut to Gershwin piece in just a second, and I just want to do the station ID. You're listening to WRFI Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and our guest for this hour is Gary Fine, and this is the Made of Clay Report, digging deeper into the issues that make and break our lives, and we've just done some of that, and here we have a recording. It's an early recording that Gershwin had a hand in, I believe, of Rhapsody in Blue. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and that was an early recording of Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. And we were talking this hour with Gary Fine. And Gary, you've worked at Green Star. You have a prison book ministry outreach. You work at the Durland Alternatives Library. How do you work with others with whom you don't share values or you don't share common, you know, interests?
It's values and common interests, and it's how you move through the world. People move through the world very differently. And I have one more hat, and I'll start with that one for how I work with people, because I have another. So I also, like I mentioned, I'm a massage therapist, and we have a studio down in Fall Creek called Fine Spirit Studio. My wife is a yoga teacher, and just say we were quite honored because she was voted the best yoga teacher in Ithaca in the Ithaca Times poll. And I say it because what I do is I try to help her run the studio, and I often take reservations. People want to use the studio for things, and people, when you do that, like, I don't know people who call to use the studio, and they all have different things that are important to them or different ways of negotiating how much money they want to pay to use the studio, and I do it rather than my wife, because I kind of enjoy all the different ways that people come at it, and I like to move with them in it. Whereas for her, her preference is, let's just do it this way, and then I don't have to think about it anymore, because she really is a thoughtful person. Maybe I'm not so thoughtful, because I don't mind changing things all the time, because people have different needs, and I want to meet them where they're at, and I want to try to help them. But then also, I've been on the board of directors for different organizations. Right now I'm on a board called the Green Star Community Projects, which isn't the Green Star Board of Directors. It's the nonprofit part of Green Star that is interested in issues of food equity and food justice. And so so we're all like-minded or alike in terms of we really want to address food scarcity issues in Ithaca, food equity issues in Ithaca. But boy, wouldn't we have different ideas about the best way to do it.
Yep.
And so how do you sit in a meeting where you have what you think is a great idea and somebody else thinks they have what's a great idea? And the whole idea is, the last thing you want to do is clash, because what you really want to do is try to solve a problem regarding food. And so I kind of find it challenging, but really it's like you kind of let go of your deeply held belief as best you can on sometimes, because really the bigger belief is we're in this together to create something good. So sometimes, even if you think you have the best idea or know the way to do something, it's better to work together to create the best you can, because if you do it all alone, it's hard. It's much better to do things in a group. And then when you write to people, when people write me in prison, it's particularly profound, because there's a fair amount that are mentally ill, it's like there's a fair amount that are really angry. There are some that are, they're like saints, and they're in prison. You can't figure what happened in your life, because something being in isolation has opened them up to something new. It's almost like a meditation. So you just meet them. You meet them where they are, and you be as authentic as you can be. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the other side of it, though. You don't not do it to get along. You have to be authentic. So it's okay to say, I would do it differently, but let's do it this way, because I really want us to move on something, and I can move with your thing. My belief isn't so deeply held that I can't move on with your way.
Right, but I guess, and in an odd sort of way, and I haven't really pressed this issue because it's not one which people resonate with often. But we are in a political climate where we are not able to say to each other across some, not just manufactured differences between the elites of the Democratic or Republican parties or those who detract, the Tea Partiers or the so-called progressives or whatever. We have a whole bunch of people that are complaining about gridlock, but nobody is showing any real ability to accommodate the needs of others that may radically differ from or be just completely unrecognizable
for themselves. Well, I think that people are working within a very small spectrum, and they're arguing. I mean, we're living in a time of mass extinction. So the things that we're even arguing about with the Tea Party progressive liberal Democrat, it's like we're ignoring, the fireball is coming from the heavens. And yet here I am sending books to people in prison. So, I mean, you do what you can do inside of it, but thinking people can't help but notice that climate change. We could list the nuclear waste being dumped into the Pacific through, the Japanese nuclear reactor exploding. There's so many different ways we could get so crazed about what's going on, and yet we're small people just trying to get by in the universe and doing what we can do. But, it's... why people get into gridlock and stuff, I think it's impossible for me to really know why people do that.
No, I'm not looking for an explanation. I'm just trying to look for what you have managed to do well, which is a way to wiggle yourself into an action that makes sense, even when the broader context may be crazy.
Well,
like our use of incarceration is madness.
Right.
But you have found a
something
way
to do
within that, and you're not claiming that it's changing the larger issue, but it's all, and it's not also the only thing you could do or the right thing to do, but it's what you do.
Well,
and that's a good thing.
The larger issue, I mean, just to keep, and this is what I share with prisoners, is there are hundreds of billions of stars in our galaxy, and there are hundreds of billions of galaxies. So when we start to think about the scope of the universe and how tiny we are in it, it sets us free and we see we're unimportant. Yet we are made of the very same things that creative wonder is. So we have some of those same co-creative powers in this small life now to express in this infinite way. But in the scheme of things, really, we're a very transient piece of dust. And so it kind of sets you free. I mean, it's small, but it sets you free. And I think the best we can do in this incarnation is to kind of find ways to set ourselves free from the traps of being, in this form.
It's a lesson in humility.
In
terms of what you were.
Well, the fact that we're going to die is a lesson in humility. The fact that we're a very temporary being.
But the argument to show people just how great enormous things is and how are rather and how we are just in a sense dust.
Right.
That is an exercise in humility, and we don't take it well. I'm not sure, because we're hearing a lot about humility these days, and I'm just not sure. I agree that that's an important step. Mm-hmm. But I'm longing for, I'm groping for the next step. What do we do in this space?
Well, again, even though we're so tiny, we are infinite beings, in that if the universe is infinite and we're a measure of the infinite, so we have a responsibility to act powerfully inside of our limitations.
As you said in the beginning, act boldly or heroically, but not to fix things, but to be the full expression of what we are committing to, knowing that we may be wrong, that we're going to need to change, but we are fully present and accounted for and ready for the day.
Right.
Let's go to a cover of a Dylan song that you picked.
Okay.
Father of Night. And
I'll be interested in hearing this.
Yeah.
Father of night, father of day, father would take darkness away. Father would teach birds to fly, build a rainbow in the sky. Father of loneliness and pain, father of love, father of rain. Father of day, father of night, father of black, father of white, father who built the mountain so high, absorbed the cloud up in the sky, father of rain, father of wheat, father of cold, father of heat, father of air and father of trees, who dwells in our hearts, in our memories, father of loneliness.
Was a cover of Bob Dylan's Father of Night. And you're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest for this hour is Gary Fine. Gary, we're coming down to the last set of conversation, and one of the things that I like to close with is to get people to talk about, what is it that you do to restore yourself? What is it that you do on a regular basis to just kind of do a full check with yourself, body, mind, heart, to get yourself going?
Well, there's a number of things. One, I do cook a lot. I think when you talk about restoring your body, mm-hmm. I think eating well is a good way to do it, and I enjoy cooking. I also garden a really lot, like a little maniacally, in terms of like I grow way more food than I could ever eat, so I give some away, but I also freeze, I dry, I root cellar, so I'm still eating from my garden last year, and hopefully we'll make it through March or April. I'll be still eating out of my garden. One of the things that's happened to me, like I told you before, I moved to town, and
sure.
So it's very hard because I have this giant garden out in the country, and in town don't have it, and I'd go out one or two days a week, but I'd be rushed and I'd be moving really fast in the gardens, and it would still produce food, but it wasn't that same grounding experience.
It didn't produce peace.
It didn't produce. It still does. I still like it, but it's not. But not in the way of like as every day. When you're in the country, you go out after work and you putter in the garden for an hour or two, and we're here. It's like, okay, I got 3 hours. I'm getting out there. I'm going to garden. Right. And so I've been very fortunate because I've been a massage therapist for 30 years, and something happened in the last year, about a year ago, where all of a sudden the same energy that I was channeling when I was gardening is now channeled in my massage work. And it's not like, it's hard to say there's an analogy to gardening and giving someone a massage, I've moved very much into like, oh, this is, there's a million ways you can give a massage. I teach massage classes at the studio that I talked about. And so when I teach them, I give people a routine, and this is a routine.
Right.
But when I'm doing massage, there is no routine. It's very intuitive. Again, you're paying attention, you're seeing the person, you're
right.
hearing the person, and then you're working on them based on where their pain is. I am very good. Again, I went to massage school because I was in pain, so I understand right. like how massage can help, and I'm very good at relieving pain. I have that skill. My fingers can feel things, and so some kind of way, that satisfaction that I got out of gardening, I now get while I'm doing massage, which was wholly unexpected because, like I said, I've been doing massage for 30 years, and it's just been in the last year that I've got this new passion because it's feeding something in me.
Right.
Before I was doing it maybe to earn a living, or I like to do it and I'm good at it, but now there's actually, I get something from it that I wasn't getting before, and I think it's only because I was used to get it from gardening, and now I can't get it that way, so I found a new way. It just comes to me in a different way.
Right, and I think you said something important. When you treat something as a tactical or a technical need, it doesn't hold you, it doesn't feed you the way it is when you treat something as an expressive need.
Yeah.
And where you're kind of, this is my life now.
Right.
And this is all of it, and I'm pouring it in, and I'm taking some things from it. And when you're, it's the same thing you were saying about investing, the heroic action.
Right.
When you
right.
invest yourself, it gives back. and we don't necessarily know what it means.
Well, the thing I notice is time. Like when uh-huh. When I'm gardening, time goes by really quickly, and it's like, oh, I got to go in, I got to do something, you know. And used to be when I did massages years ago, I'd see the clock and I'd go, oh, about an hour, hour, 10 minutes. Okay, I'm done. And now it's like, I look and it's like an hour and a half. I go, oh, all right. You know, like the time flies by because I'm somewhere else. You know, I'm not exactly, my mind isn't in that linear place. It's something else. I can't say what it is, but time goes by very quickly and it's very pleasurable. I mean, I want my life to last a long time and I do try to slow it down in some ways. But then when you're doing things you really like, it does zoom by in some way.
Right. But all that zooms by is the moment from which you were aware to the moment which you are aware, and in between was an eternity.
Right, that's
And then to be deeply immersed in play or rapture, or, I mean, there are all sorts of language that you can use to describe what that state is, but that's often our most creative and our most fully engaged play. Now, other people may not be experiencing the same thing we're experiencing even when they're with them. I imagine some of your clients experience that too, and some of them don't, but you're there.
Right. No, they do experience it. I'm very fortunate. It is funny to play on people's bodies.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I take that exactly in the spirit which it's intended.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, what you had given out before, and I want to note it again because I don't want to lose it. Internet address, the web address for the prisoner list. Yeah.
So two things. I'd like to before. When I told you about the food justice and the Green Star Community Project. I just want to mention that there is a benefit concert with the Blind Spots on February 14th, Friday night at the Green Star Space to raise money for our efforts to bring food equity and food justice to the community. So people can Google the Blind Spots or something and find out. But the other one is the PrisonerExpress.org, which is a project of the Durland Alternatives Library. And I invite everybody who's listening to come up to the library. It is such a treasure of information. It's free. It's open to everybody. It's really welcoming. It is a totally cool place to hang out.
Gary, you know, it's been really good to get to know you. Our guest for this hour has been Gary Fine.
Thanks.
And you're listening to the Made of Clay Report, and we are going to go out on Leonard Cohen's Democracy. Do you want to say anything about that before we put it on?
I think he says it better than I can.
Okay. Well, I would tend to agree with almost anything on that one.
disappointment where the women kneel to pray for the grace of God in the desert here, in the desert far away. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Was Leonard Cohen, Democracy, and you are listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. And